This week's episode of War Rocket Ajax is brought to you by Warby Parker. You've heard us talk about Warby Parker on the show before. They are sellers of eyeglasses, and as someone who wears prescription eyeglasses every single day of my life until I am dead, I can tell you that a lot of places that sell eyeglasses tend to overprice them and not have very nice-looking glasses. Warby Parker does neither of those things. They have very affordable glasses that are not even close to as expensive as your iPhone. They start at $95, and their glasses look great. They come out with new series of glasses all the time. Great-looking stuff, stuff that I think looks amazing, and they do some great stuff for people who need glasses as well. We'll talk a little bit about that a little later in the show. To find out more, go to warbyparker.com/Ajax. But Chris, we also have something else we need to talk about right here at the top of the show.
That's right, Matt. This episode of War Rocket Ajax is also brought to you by you. If you are one of our supporters on the brand new War Rocket Ajax Patreon. Now, we will talk about this on a future episode where we're back to our normal format, but for right now, all you need to know is that we are turning to you, the listener, to help support War Rocket Ajax and keep me and Matt having fun, just as we have been for over 5 years. You can check it out at patreon.com/warrocketajax. You can see all the lists of rewards as well as the things that we will be doing when we hit our milestone goals. We've already hit the level where we will be doing an additional Every Story Ever show every month, but there's plenty up there for you to check out and support. And if you've already backed us on Patreon, thank you very much. Welcome to the 2015th annual Flash Gordon Memorial Awards for Excellence in the Fields of Comic Books and Pop Culture, right here on War Rocket Ajax. Once again, we are back, and once again, we are your hosts. My name is Chris Sims. With me, as always, the man to my left, Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how are you feeling about the awards show this year, buddy?
Chris, can you believe that it has been 2015 years? Of this award show.
It's flown by.
Jesus was born. The shepherds and the animals and the wise men and the little drummer boy and Joseph and Mary all picked up and went to the War Rocket Ajax Theater to see the first annual Gordies.
Interesting fact. Interesting historical and liturgical fact. Jesus was the first recipient of the War Rocket Ajax Intercontinental Championship.
Well deserved. That's back when I think the strap was blue.
It was a light blue.
That's right.
It was also made of, the strap was, I believe, myrrh. The side plates were frankincense. Of course, the main plate was gold.
Obviously. And it had his Jesus logo on either side, on the smaller plates.
Exactly. That well-known Jesus logo that many of us would call a cross.
That's right. It's the 2015th annual Gordies. We've got some amazing guests here.
Michael Caine.
Michael Caine out here in the audience. Shaquille O'Neal is out here. And
Promoting his new film, Caddyshack.
Promoting Caddyshack.
Is that Tim Allen I see?
I believe he's saying, out there in the crowd. We've got Huey
Twilight
Lewis.
Twilight Sparkle is here.
Twilight Sparkle.
Human Twilight Sparkle is here.
A stalwart of this award show. Huey Lewis, I see out there in the audience. If this is it, he's saying out there. He's going to help us with our finances before the end of this show, I'm pretty sure. A gala crowd is here.
Rip Randall and Zeus, putting aside their differences, to join us here at the War Rocket Ajax Theater for the Gordies.
What a show we have. Now, if you're not familiar with the format of the Gordies, we are not like your other award shows where
we give the power to you.
That's
sort
right.
Of.
We're not even the kind of award show where we pick the categories and then have people vote on the winners. This is the award show, the annual award show, where you, the War Rocket Ajax listener, pick the categories. You all pick the categories. And then we, based on those categories, select the winners. And Chris, I am excited about this list of categories that we have this year.
We did get a lot of good awards categories. We just sent them over to the Statue Foundry. So any day now, people will be presenting their War Rocket Ajax Flash Gordon Memorial Award statues.
That's right. We have life-size, full-size statues of Flash Gordon that will be shipped to the winners in 4 to 6 weeks. They're going to really enjoy having those.
One of these, we really ought to get them. We really ought to get them made before we do the show.
Well, you know, we have to have them engraved right there on Sam Jones's face is where the nameplate goes.
That's right. And nobody, not even us, knows who the winners will be.
That's right. Let's not let this be like one of those other award shows that runs super long. Let's just get right into it, Chris. Let's get into our first set of categories for this year's Gordies. All right. You ready for this, Chris? You ready for our first set of categories?
I am ready. I am ready to present the awards to the best and the worst of comics and pop culture.
All right. What we've got in our first set of categories, which comes from Alan Cho, we've got two from him. The first one is Best Beard on a Comic Creator based on touch/texture. Who's going to win this prestigious award?
Who's your pick for this?
Now, I think the obvious choice would be an Alan Moore.
Really? You think Alan Moore has the best touch and texture of his beard?
No. I think he's the obvious choice.
Okay.
I think the true winner, Jason Aaron.
Yeah, I think Jason, like for me, Jason Aaron was the easy choice. It is a proud beard. It is a mighty beard. It seems like it would be soft. Now, I should say, the only beard I have touched on a comic book creator in the year 2014 was when Chip Zdarsky put his tongue in my ear in Seattle. And I felt that brushing against my face. And I can say it was refreshingly soft.
Oh, well, that sounds good. Okay. So we might split this one between Jason Aaron and Chip Zdarsky. We both have con stories that lead to our selections for this category.
Yours, did you get to touch Jason Aaron's beard?
I did not, but you have your Chip Zdarsky story. I have the story about when we were at Comic-Con. You were super drunk. We were walking back to the hotel room. You saw a gentleman walking by, and you said, "That guy looks like Jason Aaron." And I said, "You're saying that strictly because of his beard, aren't you?" And he said, "Yes, I am." You know who's another dark horse contender for this category? Whose beard I actually did like get to see up close for texture?
Who's that?
And touch? Christopher Sabella.
Sabella does have a good beard.
He's got a good beard.
Sabella's got a, you know, like you said, dark horse candidate, I think. Yeah.
I think for the 2016 Gordies, if we do this category again, Sabella, surefire winner. This year, I got to give it to Jason Aaron.
I think Jason Aaron is a good choice. I would give, just sheer volume of that beard. But I would say that probably the runner-up would, if Jason Aaron were to shave his beard tomorrow, I would say the runner-up would go to Chip Zdarsky. It's neat. It's not as full, but it's refreshingly soft.
He does keep a well-groomed beard. All right, the next category from Alan is a little oddly worded. The best excuse for not reading a comic book series that you should be reading but totally aren't reading.
I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to peel back the curtain a little bit, Matt. I'm going to peel back the curtain for our listeners here at the Gordy Awards. You and I tend to only be current on comics we don't like.
That's true to a degree. I stay fairly current on a few comics I like, but I do a lot of like catching up on stuff, and I do a lot of dipping in to read stuff for the sake of reviewing it or talking about it on the show.
I think there was a time when both of us had read every single issue of Justice League, but I was behind on like all of my favorite comics. I was like 6 months behind on all my favorite comics. Like there are plenty of comics that I can't read just because I can't, you know, I can't cover them. And so I, you know, I'm on a daily deadline at Comics Alliance, so I have to read stuff that I can potentially write about, and everything else I just read for fun.
Yeah.
So I would say if we're going to talk about the best excuse for not reading a comic that I should be reading, it's that my graphic novel came out this year. Downset Fight came out this year. So I couldn't, like, I haven't read Meteor Men yet, which is by, it's Jeff Parker's Oni book. I haven't read Terrible Lizard, which looks awesome. Just because there's a conflict of interest there for me to cover those. And they look amazing. I've got a stack of Oni books that looks fantastic that I can't get through because I'm reading stuff that I can write about.
Yeah, that's the thing about like kind of professionally reading comics or semi-professionally reading comics. You end up reading the stuff you have to write about instead of the stuff you want to read a lot of the time.
Believe me, I would have loved to shout how good Squirrel Girl number one was from the mountaintops, but I am kind of financially tied to Erica Henderson's success.
Yeah, and here's the thing. You're right. The Jeff Parker Meteor Men book, really good.
It's been
barbecue
on my bedside table for like 3 months.
Barbecue Talk is in that comic.
Oh, God, so good.
It is a good book. Read it when you can. My excuse, here's a specific excuse for not reading a comic yet that I should be reading. I have not gotten to Odyssey yet.
Oh, it's really good.
Here's why. A ton of what I read on a weekly basis is digital. It is the easiest way for me to read comics quickly. Odyssey, with its color and art, is a comic that I want to read on paper.
Really? I actually liked reading it digitally.
I'm sure it reads fine digitally. But there's something about the look of it and how colorful it is and just that art that just begs me to want to read it on paper.
That retina display, bro.
Yeah, that's true. I got to get a new iPod one of these days.
Same.
Cause
that's a good reason. That's a good reason. We can't read the comics that we totally should be reading because we don't have current gen iPads. Patreon.com/WarRocketAjax.
I have an iPad 1 that I'm still using.
Me too.
I can't update any of the apps on it.
I can't update the Comixology app.
Okay. Thanks, Alan Cho, for those categories.
And congratulations to me for my first one of the night.
All right. The next category comes from Uzi? Iwizi? I'm not sure how you pronounce it.
I think it's Uzi.
Uzi, but it's not David Uzumeri. It's spelled E-W-Z-Z-Y. This person's one category is Celebrity Comic Writer of the Year. Good or bad, your call.
Ooh, Matt, do you have a nomination for that?
I'll tell you the one that I heard about the most, and that is Alyssa Milano.
What did Alyssa Milano write this year?
She had an Archaea comic.
Oh, that's right.
Called Hacktivist.
I remember that.
That I read a little bit of the first issue of, and then had to stop.
Fair enough.
Do you have another person to add to that category?
I think this one kind of almost by default has to go to Gerard Way, who you know, his entire comics writing career has kind of been accompanied by, he's that guy from My Chemical Romance. But since CM Punk's Celebrity Comics writing debut will not happen until this year,
yeah, shoe in for 2016's show, yeah. CM Punk,
the 2016th annual Gordies. I think you have to give it to that issue of what was it, Edge of Spider-Verse, with the kind of Evangelion inspired story.
Sure, but let's be totally, totally real here. One issue of Edge of Spider-Verse matters. And it was not that one.
Which one mattered?
Spider-Gwen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that is true.
But, okay, another possibility for
this category. I've already forgotten that Spider-Gwen did not debut in her own ongoing series.
Another possibility for this category, and I think this is definitely on the good side, Brian Posehn, who is continuing to write a fairly lengthy run with Jerry Duggan on Deadpool.
Yeah, that's one that I haven't read. I haven't gotten caught up on it. Again, I do a podcast with the guy who edits Deadpool, so can't write about that one, so I'm behind. You know, you mentioned that it's a lengthy run. It's been like, what, 2-3 years?
It's since Marvel Now started, which has been a couple years.
Yeah, he's been on there for a real long time.
Yeah. So that's
I bet he's been on there long enough that he's like, just shoot me some days.
Okay.
He was on Just Shoot Me.
Let's give it to Gerard Way. I think Gerard Way probably wins this. So Uzi, thank you for that category.
That was a good one. That was a fun one.
All right, we've got two categories from Alex Androsky. Longtime listener of the show, asked a lot of questions on the show in the past. The first category is the Cobra Commander Award for Best MacGuffin of 2014.
Now, if our listeners aren't familiar with the term MacGuffin, a MacGuffin is the whatever item it is that people are looking for that kicks off the plot. It can be anything. It can be the Maltese Falcon is probably the most famous example of a MacGuffin.
Sure. It's the detonator in the briefcase. It's
the briefcase from Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, it's every Infinity Gem in every Marvel movie. Those are MacGuffins.
That is a pretty good one. That is a pretty good thought. Now that you mention that, I do think the Infinity Gem in Guardians of the Galaxy led to a pretty fun romp.
Yeah, I don't know that the MacGuffin itself is all that interesting. But
no, but MacGuffins never are.
Sometimes they can be clever in how they're devised. I do think that what that Infinity Gem ends up doing, and sort of its effect on the climax of that movie, is really, really nicely done. It all comes out really well.
The MacGuffin leads to the Guardians of the Galaxy joining hands and beating Ronan the Accuser with the power of friendship like they're Sailor Scouts?
Yes.
That's pretty great. That was... I saw that movie with my girlfriend, and I leaned over and I said, oh my god, they're Sailor Mooning it. So that it allowed that, I think, is a pretty pretty big recommendation for the Infinity Gem from Guardians of the Galaxy.
To offer up a MacGuffin from something that's specifically comics, I would offer two options.
Okay, I've got another one as well.
Okay. One is Peter Parker's consciousness and soul in Amazing Spider-Man, because 2014 was the year that Peter Parker got back into his own body after it being occupied by Dr. Octopus. So that's one. And then the other one is the multiple MacGuffins in Superior Foes of Spider-Man. Those being Silvermane's still alive head after everybody thought he was dead.
And listen, can I be real with you for a second, Matt?
Yes.
I do fucking love Silvermane.
Yes. And then the other MacGuffin in that book is a painting of Doctor Doom that reveals his real face, but the art always covers it.
I really have to catch up on that book.
It's the best.
I've got the first volume around here somewhere. I really need to sit down and read it. I would also – this might be pushing what the definition of MacGuffin is, considering how important it is to the plot. But King Midas's finger in Midas flesh.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's a really good one.
Yeah. That may be the winner. I think it's between King Midas's finger and Silvermane's head.
I do love Silvermane. But yeah, I think King Midas's finger is one that we can be pretty comfortable giving it to.
Yeah.
That is a great book if people out there have not read Midas Flesh.
Midas Flesh is really good. Midas Flesh and Superior Foes of Spider-Man were great books from the past year that you should read. With good MacGuffins. So I think we're giving it to Midas's finger. Alex, thank you for those two categories. We greatly appreciate it. Our next category comes from James McGee. I believe that's how you say his name. His category is best idea that sounded terrible when you first heard it, but turned out to be genuinely amazing.
I really like this category because I noticed when I was writing comics reviews for Comics Alliance that I always tend to have the same format of review for things that I'm really excited about. I always start off with, you know, I wasn't really expecting to enjoy X for these reasons. It turns out X is pretty good. I am always expecting to be disappointed when I read comics, apparently.
I think that's a defense mechanism that I similarly have, where it's just like, I'm going to go into this with no expectations.
I have been burned quite often in the past.
So I have a very clear winner for this category. I think it may be yours,
too. What's your pick?
Grayson.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was thinking that it might be the Shaft comic, because the first issue of Shaft came out in December.
Yeah.
But, man, Grayson, that is the best comic with what I thought was going to be the worst idea.
Well, it comes out of the worst thing, right? Like the very premise of it seems so flawed, because you're like, so Dick Grayson's identity has been revealed to the world, and then he's going to become a secret agent? What?
Yeah.
And then they figured out, Tim Seeley and Tom King figured out a way to make it work, and made a great comic out of it.
Yeah, and Dick Grayson's always not wearing a shirt, which, as yeah. I know, is my criteria for a good Batman story.
Yeah.
And it's fun, it's adventurous, it's cleverly written. Along the same lines, I think Afterlife with Archie is a pretty good one, but, I mean, Afterlife with Archie, the more you think about it, the more it should work. Grayson was a big surprise.
Yeah, I had a feeling that Afterlife with Archie, it surprised me tonally, but I had a feeling that it could work. Grayson, I just couldn't figure it out. I couldn't figure out a way that it could have worked, and then it did.
I remember reading Forever Evil and just thinking, like, oh, Jesus, how is this going to work?
Yeah.
Turns out it's one of the best books that DC is putting out right now.
So that is our pick for that category, James. Thanks for that softball. Next category is from Alex Chung. Alex has for us the best comic to take on a long, long road trip.
That implies that you need something lengthy that's gonna occupy your time, but you also need something that's good.
Complete.
And complete, yeah. So what were the big comics of 2014?
I have my answer.
Okay, what's yours?
The Wake.
Oh, I did not read The Wake.
The Wake.
I have it.
The Wake is really good. It's Scott Snyder and Sean Murphy throwing curveballs at you for 10 issues. It all fits in one hardcover edition, but it's super weighty. It's got awesome horror and sci-fi and action and future dystopia and, like, all these crazy genre tropes. I wrote an article for Comics Alliance comparing it to a lot of different movies. Like, the first few issues make you think it's like Rambo. Then they make you think it's like a John Carpenter horror movie. And then it turns into this dystopian thing, like Waterworld thing. It's really interesting. there's so much to chew on in it. And it ends in this kind of like satisfyingly ambiguous way with a creation myth. Like it goes so big at the end. I think it works masterfully, and I think it's a great book to just sit down and read in one big long read, such as I was on a long road trip. So that's my choice for this category, The Wake.
I think that a good one to take on a road trip might be Jiro Kawada's Bat Manga.
That is a good one.
Because those books are pretty thick. And since they're coming out digitally, look, you can fit a bunch of them on an iPad. That is for sure. But they are – you wrote a really good article reviewing them and about how kind of strange they were, even for a, you know, what, 40, 50-year-old stories about a character who's been around for 75 years.
And something that was coming out concurrently to, you know, the Batman 66 TV show. It's an adaptation of that TV show, but it is also absolutely not.
Yeah, it is a weird offshoot of so many different elements of Batman. There's, you know, Silver Age stories that are kind of adapted for the Japanese audience and expanded in ways that are kind of unique to manga that you don't really see a lot in Western comics, especially at the time.
Yeah.
But
it's also got Dragon Ball Z villains.
It does have Dragon Ball Z villains.
The mayor turns
Professor
into
Gorilla, who's great.
Yes. The mayor turns into a mutant Dragon Ball Z villain. That is nutso.
So, yeah, that would definitely be my pick. Although failing that, something that you and I both had a really good time reading this year, although it was not new. Now I'm just answering this question like it's asking for advice. But you and I in 2014 both sat down and read Judge Dredd Complete Case Files Volume 3, which has the Apocalypse War and Block Mania.
That's right.
And that's a comic that'll get you through a road trip.
If you took a stack of those Judge Dredd Complete Case Files books, I've got the first four, and man, you could just burn through them. The Volume 1 is a little rocky and weird, but they're all fun reads. But I think ultimately our split decision on this one is going to go to The Wake and Bat Manga. So that's that one. Alex, thank you for that category.
Enjoy your trip.
All right, we've got three categories here from Ryan Hillis, longtime listener. The first one is pretty straightforward. He's asking us for the best comic for new readers.
No, does he mean like new comics readers or like children? like readers who are new to this world?
Though I think you can interpret it as people who are new to reading. I think what he means is people who are new to comics.
Either way, I think you could make a really good case for it to be Lumberjanes.
I think Lumberjanes is a strong pick, yeah.
Yeah, that is a comic that, I mean, I'm sure, I haven't looked, but I'm sure it was on a lot of best of the year lists. It was very good. But I am going to give it to what is probably my favorite ongoing series right now, which is Gotham Academy.
Also a good pick.
It is very firmly set in the DC universe. It's very firmly set in the Batman corner of the DC universe. This is a book where Bookworm and Aunt Harriet and Professor Milo are showing up as background characters for, you know, people like me who care about Bookworm and Aunt Harriet and Professor Milo. But it's also really accessible because at its heart, it's a weird, spooky teen drama that just, you know, Batman shows up for one panel in every issue and kind of lurks around and makes his presence known. Which I think is a really interesting way to provide an entry point to the DC universe that I really love. Like, the comic right now that I think is doing the DC universe that I love the best is Grayson. But the comic that I think is most rewarding if you're just going into it cold, that's kind of going after an audience that DC has traditionally not really gone after that much, that's Gotham Academy. And it's doing a really amazing job of it.
I think a book that similarly does that is Batgirl. Despite its problems at the end of the year, it really came out of the gate like doing something fresh and new that appeals to a different audience. than your typical comic reader.
We've talked about Batgirl, and again, I really I love that book. I think they're doing something really cool with it. I really like the way that they're taking Barbara Gordon in a new direction. But they did have a very big misstep that was unfortunate, and also, you know, unintentional, and also something that I think they really did a nice job of apologizing for and acknowledging. But I don't feel like books like Lumberjanes or Gotham Academy have really had that misstep yet.
Well, Batgirl is not my choice for this category. Here's my choice for this category.
Okay.
The idea of something appealing to new readers, I take that as being like, don't throw them in the deep end. Give them something that's kind of a genre book that's not necessarily superhero-y, but it can have some comics-y concepts in it, right? Some sci-fi, maybe even superpower concepts in it. But then otherwise it's got elements of romance and comedy. And that book is Sex Criminals.
Ooh, that's a good one. That is a really good one. But that definitely does not work for my definition of new readers.
No, do not give that to a child.
Please do not give that to children.
But somebody who is an adult who has not read a lot of comics but enjoys elements of romance and comedy and maybe a little Randy naughtiness in their comic would enjoy Sex Criminals. That's my choice for that category. So we've got Gotham Academy and Sex Criminals. Two good picks, I think. The next one from Ryan is the High Haters Award for the comic the comic that made all the right people mad. This is a tough one.
This is a tough one.
Because a lot of comics made a lot of people mad this year.
I know a lot of comics made us mad this year.
But I think a lot of them made people mad for valid reasons.
Yes.
What is a comic that came out in 2014 that made people mad that, you know, that is good in a good way?
That's a tough one. Because when you think about when you think about the comics that made people mad, when you phrase it like that, then the only things you can think of are the comics that, like, that made us mad, that we feel like are genuinely, you know, rough.
Possibly my winner for the previous category could take this one, Sex Criminals. There were some complaints about that comic. It got removed from Comixology at one point. There were people who complained about the content of it. But, you know, it started up a discussion about what's okay in comics and what's not, and sort of created a little more of a groundswell for that book that continued throughout the year. So I think that's a contender.
I think, and again, I'm going to need to explain this. I think Batgirl might be a good contender for this one. Not for the issue that made everybody justifiably angry.
Right.
But for all the people who didn't like the new costume because it's not practical, quote unquote, when it is one of the more practical suits we've seen in comics in a long time.
Yeah.
The guy who told Cameron Stewart is like, oh, you know, she'd never be able to fight in that. And Cameron Stewart drew the picture of that girl doing yoga in her costume. And going, oh, it's fine for me. That was really good.
Here's another contender for that category.
Okay.
Multiversity.
Did Multiversity make people mad?
It made people mad in that, like, this is confusing and I don't like it way.
I mean, it was confusing. There were issues that I did not like.
Sure. Wait, what were the issues you didn't like?
I didn't like the Just.
Okay.
I thought, but we talked about that on the show. Like, I thought the Just was kind of boring.
But it's not because it's confusing.
No. I thought Pax Americana was confusing, but I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Yeah. I think that book probably did that Grant Morrison thing of, like, I hate this because I don't get it.
Yeah, I feel like Pax Americana was the closest thing to this is just complicated for the sake of being complicated. Like, Pax Americana was the closest to that being, like, straight up 100% true. Like, yes, this is kind of just complicated because it wants to be really complicated.
And yet it was the comic, like, it was the comic this year that I just kept digging back into. And
yeah,
I loved how it was kind of like a puzzle you had to unlock.
Yeah, I think it was very, very rewarding.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one thing for something to be confusing for the sake of being confusing. I think Pax Americana ended up ultimately being rewarding. And that's the difference.
Yeah, I don't feel like this year had, and maybe I'm just not remembering it, like, I don't feel like this year had a Miles Morales that people were, you know, that all the wrong people were mad about. I mean, there was Thor, yeah. But I don't remember there being as much grumbling and grumpiness about Thor as there was about Miles Morales. I don't remember there being the kind of reaction to that. And maybe that's just because...
Like, or even like Night Runner, you know?
Yeah, or even Night Runner.
Or Batwing. Were people mad about Batwing?
I mean, there's the new Wally West. There's the new 52 Wally West. But I feel like the complaints about the new Wally West that I've heard, and again, we are a self-selecting group of people who have conversations, were mostly just about the character. Like, everybody's like, oh, it's fine that he's black. It's just not, like, he's just not a very good character.
Yeah.
I don't remember there being something on that level, but maybe I'm missing something. Maybe we are fortunate enough to have forgotten all the anger of the year.
Okay, so we've got some nominees. What do we have, like, a solid pick? I think maybe we just give it to Batgirl.
Yeah, I think I think Batgirl and the new Bat, specifically the new Batgirl costume, I think is a good one to hand that over to.
Okay. The next category from Ryan is the Betty the Halfling Award for Best Use of Drugs in a Comic.
I am probably going to have to give this one to Annihilator, the Grant Morrison, Fraser Irving book, which is highly, highly enjoyable. It is super Grant Morrison-y. I said in my review, if you don't like Grant Morrison, this is not the comic that's going to turn you around on him. It is, in fact, the comic that will just confirm everything you already think. But that is a very, very enjoyable comic about a dude who is a complete scumbag, who is constantly on the drugs.
I'm giving it to Ultraman snorting crushed up kryptonite.
Oh, wasn't this best? Wasn't this best?
I loved it. That was the one saving grace of Forever Evil for me.
We are going to have to, like, that will always be the question that haunts War Rocket Ajax. Was that meant to be funny?
Thank you, Ryan, for those categories. Our next set of categories comes from Greg Thalen. And the first one,
I believe,
he's got,
it's Thalen rhymes with felon.
The first one of those is least worrisome news about Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice.
This is a good category because that is a tough one. That is a tough one to find. I'm tempted to say that the least worrisome news is Jason Momoa being cast as Aquaman.
That's my choice. That is my definite choice.
Except that it makes me feel like, you know, my big complaint about Justice League 1-6 and the New 52 Aquaman was that they pushed too hard for Aquaman to be a grumpy badass. Like, Aquaman shows up and stabs parademons in the face with a trident.
Right.
And I feel like that is, you know, that's what we're going to get from Jason Momoa. They're like, oh, we cast the new Conan in it. I think Jason Momoa could do a really, really good job with Aquaman, but I worry.
Well, I think everybody in that movie is going to be a grumpy badass.
which is really upsetting.
A given, right? The problem with New 52 Aquaman at the beginning, though, wasn't even so much that he was a badass. Like, I'm okay with Aquaman being a badass. It's that he was always defensive.
Yeah, that's the thing. It comes off as so defensive.
He had this weird chip on his shoulder. As long as the movie doesn't do that with Aquaman, and he's allowed to just be cool, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I think the way to do Aquaman is to do what Brave and the Bold did. And I know you've said that a million times, but I don't necessarily mean just doing Brave and the Bold. I think the reason Aquaman works on Brave and the Bold is because he's an Aquaman who has the confidence of being Aquaman. Like, Aquaman himself thinks being Aquaman is great, so why should we not think that? Whereas the Aquaman of the New 52, you know, is like, I don't talk to fish. Yeah. You're a blogger.
Here's what's encouraging to me about Momoa as Aquaman. I read an interview that was all about how he's going to embrace his Hawaiian heritage as part of being Aquaman, which means that he has thought about the role for a second, at least.
And there was that other interview where he talked about how he was up for Drax, but he didn't want his kids to see him as just another, you know, another dude who just kills things with knives.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, his Conan character, you know, he's in Conan, he's in that Game of Thrones series that everybody likes that I haven't watched because it's for nerds. That makes, like, if that is his desire as an actor, then I feel like maybe he's a guy who can give Aquaman a little depth. Maybe he's a guy who won't just go, okay, so I just stabbed these guys in the face with a trident. Cool.
Yeah. I have some hope for Momoa as Aquaman.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not seeing that movie.
Me neither. But when they make a solo Aquaman movie that's not directed by Zack Snyder, maybe? Maybe. All right, the next category from Greg is the best movie watched for movie fighters. I think this is an easy one. It's Gun Crazy.
Yeah, Gun Crazy was a really... If you have not listened to Movie Fighters, go listen to Gun Crazy, because the way that that show normally works is that I am really optimistic, and then we do a little musical break where Matt and I go watch the movie, and I come back and I am crushed and defeated and angry. Gun Crazy, I was really worried about going into it, and then we came back and I was like, that movie was great.
Yeah, it's really good. Go listen to that episode if you want to hear us just gush about how much we enjoyed an old movie.
Yeah, really, really fun.
All right, those are our two categories from Greg Thalen. Greg, thank you for those. The next two categories come from Frank Costello. First one from Frank is best page turn.
I was thinking about this a lot because, you know, page turns are the magic of comics.
That's right.
If you want – and it's something that it's hard to really – get a handle on until you start making comics of your own. But the way that you control the pacing of the story and the way that you control reveals is through page turns. And digital comics have made that a really interesting thing, because instead of doing a page turn, you just, you know, click forward on the screen in Comixology or on your iPad or whatever. And that means you don't have to plot it out on a left-hand facing page, which makes things a lot simpler. There are so many good reveals from this year. There are so many good gags that have come up when you turn the page. It's really hard to narrow it down. There are a lot of really good ones in Sex Castle, which is a book that we haven't talked about much yet, but that is
100% true. Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of the best books of the year. Kyle Starks is a friend of the show. Obviously he's been on before. But the way that he paces out this book is so delightful, in how every page turn brings you an even more ridiculously over the top thing. My pick for best of the year would be the reveal of the Gunjux in Sex Castle.
Yeah. I think maybe just the entire book Sex Castle wins best page turn.
It's the best page turn.
Yeah.
You could make the case.
Best collective page turns.
Sex. Best book that you don't want to stop reading once you start.
Yeah.
But yeah, Kyle made sure to get that on a left-hand facing page. So if you were reading the print version, you could just go like it's beautiful. They're nunchucks that are also guns. It's beautiful.
All right, we've got best page turn. The next category from Frank Costello, because there are a lot of good ones. Best colorist.
I think there's one front runner.
I can think of two main ones that I would want to name. Who's your like main front runner?
I mean, I feel like this is Jordy Belair's year.
Jordy Belair was great, but Nathan Fairbairn was also great.
He was really great, and he did Pax Americana, which is a late year contender. Especially with having to do all the Spiral Dynamics color theory stuff.
Yeah.
Like, that had to have been a huge friggin' pain.
Coloring that book had to be a job. Like, a serious, no breaks job. Not that coloring isn't always a job, but I think for, like, complete body of work, yes, we do have to give it to Jordy Belair.
Yeah, I mean, like, Moon Knight alone, just the idea of leaving Moon Knight uncolored, that's brilliant. Jordy obviously works with Declan Shalvey really well, but I don't think there's any getting around that this was her year.
Yeah.
She did a really super amazing job. She got the Eisner, which I think was obviously well-earned. But yeah, a lot of really good coloring this year. There was Jordy Belair, there was Nathan Fairbairn, there's, you know, always Dave Stewart is doing an incredible job with stuff.
My mortal enemy and the man I share a name with, Matthew Wilson, did some amazing coloring on, you know, The Wicked and the Divine and so many other books.
He did a bang-up job. There's a lot of really great coloring out there, but sheer volume of stuff and sheer high quality, it's really hard not to give it to Jordy Belair.
Jordy, congratulations. You won another award this year. Or for 2014. Frank, thank you for those categories.
Those were fun.
The next two categories come from Noah Chevalier. And the first one he has is the hackiest Grant Morrison writing of 2014. Now, is your answer for this going to be The Just?
No, because I don't think The Just was hacky. I just didn't enjoy it.
Okay. Because my pick for this is Happy.
No, I didn't read Happy.
I read the first two issues of Happy and said that's enough of that.
My pick would actually be Annihilator.
Oh, really?
Because
really like it.
I really, really like it, but it is a Grant Morrison book about a writer who does a lot of drugs, who gets visited by his own creation, who has been sending him messages from a higher dimension that show up in his brain, and he's on the run and he has to finish writing his story, and it is the most Grant Morrison thing. It's like, it's as much as I love that book, I spent the first issue rolling my eyes. And it's good. And Fraser Irving is kicking ass at that book. Like, it is beautiful. But at the same time, it is it's the, like, really, Grant? Like, really? You didn't get this out of your system with The Invisibles? You didn't get this out of your system with any of the other books where you've done this?
Well, Animal Man.
Yeah, Animal Man, The Invisibles. He does it in fucking Batman.
Yeah.
So Flex Metallo.
For me, the issue with Happy, and again, Derek Robertson draws the hell out of that book. But it's Grant Morrison trying, like, it's seemingly too hard to be gritty. Like, just the amount of cursing in that comic. And I don't care. Cursing is fine, but there's a level at which we're just like, okay, that's enough. You know, there's just too much of it. And it's just like, look at how gritty I'm making this comic. And it's kind of a parody of gritty comics, I think. I think it's Morrison trying to parody Garth Ennis. But I just don't think it works.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of Morrison's recent work has had a little element of parody, a little element of playing with other people in comics. Like, if Happy is his Garth Ennis parody, there's a segment of Pax Americana that's certainly his Mark Miller parody. As much as we kind of read that book as a big fuck you to Alan Moore, that there are three or four pages in it that are a huge fuck you to Mark Miller.
Sure.
At the same time, I feel like if he's doing a parody of gritty comics, or if he's doing a parody of over-the-top violence, like he certainly is in Pax Americana, the problem with doing a parody of those elements is that you're still using those elements.
Right.
So there is always a level where you become what you're parodying, you know?
Yeah. All right, those are our choices for the hackiest Grant Morrison writing of 2014. Noah's second category is the best / worst Kanye West moment of 2014.
Now, who's Paul McCartney? Kanye's going to give him a new career. that was 2015, right? That was this week.
That was this week. Yes. So
okay,
we missed the boat on that one. So I think the answer has to be the video for Bound 2.
Ooh, I didn't see it.
It's him and Kim Kardashian in front of a green screen with a background that's like the desert on a motorcycle, and she's like on the handlebars of the motorcycle, and he's singing to her as they ride around the desert on their motorcycle. Okay. It's ludicrous. It is a ludicrous video.
Oh, Ludicrous is in it?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I'm going to go with that. I'm going to say the video for Bound 2.
I will defer to you on this. I'm actually just going to Google Kanye West 2014 and see what comes up.
All right. Tell me what you get.
Let's see. We got a little Rolling Stone. Kanye West co-writer says new album is like a pair of Timberlands.
What the fuck does that mean? So it's like it was produced by two Timberlands?
I hope so. let's see. Kanye hosted a listening party with 30 people listening to his new album. He played his new album 3 times in a dark room of 20 people. That seems fun.
Yeah.
That was in September. I don't know. Like, it seems like Yeezy been quiet for the past little bit until he gave that old British man a career.
I think it's got to be Bound 2. All right, Noah, thank you for those categories. Our next set of categories comes from Charlotte of Oz. The first one is the best video game from about 2 years ago. Now we are known on this show for playing video games from 2 years ago.
Yeah, because you know what? That's when they get cheap.
That's right. Chris, what's your pick for this category?
Well, there's one that it has to be by default, and there's one that I'm going to give it to, but I've got to fudge it a little.
Okay.
The one that it would have to be by default, because believe it or not, I did not play a lot of old video games this year. I got a couple for Christmas. I got our friend Ben Gully got me Skate 2, so I'm excited to try that out.
Okay.
And I got a game, Suda 5-1 game called Killer is Dead that I'm really looking forward to playing, and that's been out for a while. But the only game from 2 years ago that I played this year was Mario Kart 8, which I played because I got a Wii U, and it was a launch title for the Wii U, which came out 2 years ago. But I am in a fudge it because there's a game that came out on consoles in December, but it's been around for a while. I believe it originally came out in 2011. So average that out and you get the 2 year gap. And that is Terraria. I have been glued to Terraria since Christmas Day. And what Terraria is I've never played Minecraft, but I understand that it is very much like Minecraft, except instead of being in a blocky 3D world, it is a 16-bit side scroller. And it is super, super fun. And I've never kind of gotten Minecraft before, because every time someone brings up Minecraft, I'm like, well, what do you do? Like, what is the point of it? And they say, oh, you dig and make stuff. I'm like, next, goodbye. But with Terraria, I really get it. You build a little town for all the merchants and stuff to show up in. You dig holes. I spent an entire day just digging a hole to the bottom of the map while my girlfriend was here, who had just gotten back from England. I had not seen her in 3 months. During her visit down, I spent a day building a hole. And I was like, look, sweetie, look at my hole. She's like, it's a very good hole, sweetheart. But to be fair, she was playing Earthbound, which is from the 90s. So, well,
enough about your bedroom life, Chris.
Matt, you ought to see my hole. I'm very proud of it.
My pick for this category is the only game I think I played from 2 years ago. I started playing a game from 2 years ago, but in 2015. So I'm not going to count it. And I'm also barely into it. The game from 2 years ago that I played last year was The Last of Us, which I did like.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that. Now that I have a PS4, I'm going to pick up the remastered version.
It's pretty good. It's more of a movie than a game, but it's good. The story is good. And
I remember you talking about it on Ajax, and what you said was that there are other games that do what it does better.
Right.
But that you enjoy it more than those games because of how it's all put together.
I don't think I enjoy it more than the Walking Dead games, but it's a reasonable companion to those games. And the DLC, it's worth playing for the DLC alone, which comes with the remastered version of the game. So, Left Behind is what the DLC is called.
Oh, does it have Nick Cage or Kirk Cameron?
Both.
What?
All right, those are our favorite video games from 2 years ago.
Mario Kart's great, by the way. Just heads up, that Mario Kart game is great.
The next category from Charlotte of Oz is video game we should have waited to play 2 years from now. So now, Chris, what game do you regret having paid new game prices for this year?
Oof. Did GTA 5 come out this year?
I think it came out in 2013.
Okay. Can it be a game that we didn't play but just watched the shit show unfold from the sidelines?
Certainly.
Okay, then it's Assassin's Creed Unity, which I will be playing next year.
Yeah, Assassin's Creed Unity is a game I want to play, but I don't want to play it now.
I got, what's the one with Connor? Is that, that's three, right?
Yeah, that's three.
Yeah, I got that as a gift from a listener, very close to when it came out. I think he had played it and didn't care for it, and so gifted it to me. And I bought four, like, right as it came out, and I thought those were both really enjoyable. I was all kind of geared up to buy Unity, but I kept hearing stuff about it, and then I just, like, I forgot it was out. And so then I just kind of watched that unfold.
Yeah. I actually have two choices for this category.
Okay, what you got?
These are both games that I quit and traded into Amazon before I got very far into them. One is Watch Dogs. I hated Watch Dogs.
I remember you talking about that.
I absolutely hated it. The other one is The Evil Within, which I sadly bought myself for Christmas and played through the first couple levels of and got so frustrated with that I just got rid of it.
Wow.
Maybe 2 years from now I'll be interested in playing it again, but luckily I got it like on a super deal on Amazon and was able to trade it back in for a decent amount. Boy, I just did not like it at all.
I feel like I probably could have waited on Smash Bros., because when it came out, like, I feel like they really screwed up putting it out for 3DS first, because I played it so much on 3DS that I got bored with it. I have barely touched the console game, which is a real shame.
The next category from Charlotte is Favorite Freaks Fact.
My favorite Freaks Fact is that he is so efficient in his directorial style that he is known as Two Takes Freaks.
My favorite Freaks fact is that the reason that he always steps over the backs of those chairs is some kind of back issue that he
has. Is that your favorite, though? Your favorite Freaks fact is that he has an injury?
Well, it's not that he has an injury. It just makes me think of him the hilarious way he sits down.
Oh, okay. Which is the best.
All right, the next category is most outstanding German suplex. I think it is, how many times did Brock Lesnar suplex John Cena at SummerSlam?
A lot.
19?
He did 16, 16. I think
it's a 16-way tie between those 16 German suplexes.
I gotta say, there's a lot of really good German suplexes in New Japan.
Oh, sure.
There's a lot of really good ones. Wrestle Kingdom was this year, though, but I know that there's been a... surely there has been a really good Tomohiro Ishii German suplex that I just can't think of off the top. Those are the German suplexes that defined the year, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Suplex repeat, suplex repeat, suplex repeat.
Yeah.
Last category from Charlotte of Oz is the Kurt Franklin and Chris Haley Award for most consistently ban-worthy War Rocket Ajax guest.
Clevenger.
Yep.
That was easy.
You managed to simultaneously insult the both of us within a minute of coming on the show.
Which, to be fair, pretty bold move. Pretty good move to pull off.
Yeah, I mean, I respect it, but it's dangerous ground, my friend.
In the words of Ric Flair, Matt, you don't have to like it, but you better learn to live with it.
Thank you, Charlotte of Oz, for those great categories.
It was very, very fun.
We'll be back with more awards in just a minute, but before we get to that, I wanted to talk a little more about Warby Parker, one of our sponsors for War Rocket Ajax this week. If you go to warbyparker.com/Ajax, here's what you can get. You can get a great pair of eyeglasses for as low as $95. Every pair of Warby Parker eyeglasses includes anti-reflective and anti-glare coating. There is no additional cost for that. They make buying glasses online easy and totally risk-free. They have a try-on at home program where you can order 5 pairs of glasses directly to your home. You can put them on your face. You can see what they look like. You can look at those frames for 5 days before you make a decision of what frames you want. You send them all back in a prepaid shipping with a prepaid shipping label. There's no obligation to purchase. If you don't want any of those 5 frames, you don't have to buy any of them. But if you like one of them, you can order your prescription glasses, and they will be in your hands within 10 business days. And they usually arrive even faster than that. And get this. For every single pair of glasses that Warby Parker sells, they give a pair of glasses to someone who needs glasses who wouldn't be able to otherwise be able to get them. And as somebody, again, who wears glasses, the very thought of not being able to wear glasses on a daily basis and be able to see what's in front of me is terrifying. So the fact that they give pairs of glasses to people is a great thing that they do. So, if you need a pair of glasses, here's what I want you to do. Go to warbyparker.com/Ajax so they know that we sent you. Find a pair of glasses that you like. Find 5 frames that you like. Do the home try-on. Order a pair of glasses. Tell them that War Rocket Ajax sent you. And everybody wins. Okay, we're back from a break, and we are going straight into our next category, which comes from David LaRosse, who says his category is raddest depiction of a transformation sequence in 2014.
All right, this one is there is no contest for me. Sailor Moon Crystal has its flaws, but the transformation sequences are fantastic. And Sailor Mercury's transformation sequence, where she ends up in the single ladies dance, is top notch. It is delightful.
I will defer to you on that, Chris.
Now, the other transformation sequences of the year would be, I think, the Kamen Rider Drive started up in the fall. I don't really care for Kamen Rider Drive's transformation sequence, to be honest with you. Certainly not compared to Forze's or Doubles. And the Tokugers, the train-themed Power Rangers in Japan. I like that they have trains that drive around their heads, but that's really it. Like, the Sailor Moon transformation sequence is the best.
Sailor Moon, the runaway winner of raddest depiction of a transformation sequence in 2014. Super rad. David, thank you for that category. The next two categories come from Rom-Com Your Mom. The first of which is Guiltiest Pleasure 2014.
Now, Matt, you know I don't believe in guilty pleasures.
I'll tell you the thing that occupied a lot of my time in 2014 that I regret the most.
Okay.
And that is WWE Supercard.
Oh man, I have not, like, it took me a while to get into Marvel Puzzle Quest, and that's like, that's fine. I can't do anything else.
I'm still playing WWE Supercard as a time waster, but I feel awful about it. I feel terrible about it. Because it's just like in my brain, I'm like, I could be doing so many other things than playing this game right now. When I really couldn't. Like, I'm waiting for something, or I'm, like, a lot of times, like, I'm playing it in a situation where there's nothing else I could be doing, really. But in my mind, I'm like, I'm missing out on so much productivity because of this dumb game.
I feel like my guilty pleasure this year is the same as my guilty pleasure literally every year for the past 10, which is that I made sure to catch up on Terra, Witch of the Black Rose at San Diego. By which I mean I got my friend Jen Vaughn to walk over and buy them for me because I'm worried that they will recognize me, especially if they see my name tag.
But Chris, look, Broadsword Comics owes as much of the I'd be willing to bet they owe a sizable percentage of their sales directly to you.
I am, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, not that they should be happy for somewhat negative reviews, but there have been so many people who have responded to me writing about at least the old Haunted Vagina issue with, yeah, I really need to check this out. And I have said, oh yeah, please do. It's terrible. I hope it goes 100 issues.
Yeah.
It's going to go 100 issues.
A sale is a sale, my friend.
Yeah, that's my whole thing. I have I paid my money. I get to say what I want.
But you're also getting people to buy it. Like, yeah. I think there's nothing wrong with anything you have done to them or in regards to
them. That I have done to them.
Yeah. The next category from Rom-Com Your Mom is the award for the best web comic, better than most print comics.
It's worth noting that it was only in March of this year, I think, that Shifty Look shut down their comics, and Galaga, which was by Ryan North and Chris Hastings and Anthony Clark, was one of my best of 2013 picks. That comic was phenomenal. I hope it comes out in a print version. I hope it has not lost time. It was so enjoyable and so fun. That would probably be my pick. Although I would also, I mean, there were so many good webcomics this year. Casey Green and Anthony Clark started up Back. Brennan Lee Mulligan and Molly Ostertag, strong female protagonist, is always amazing. There's a lot of really, really great stuff out there.
Yeah. Speaking of Anthony Clark, I think my perma winner for this category, forever and ever, is going to be and is Nedroid. The Bertedo comics. It just like they're infinitely entertaining. And there are print versions of those comics now, but the webcomic, I will never fall out of reading those comics.
They are not bad. Dinosaur Comics also pretty great. Actually, you know what's a good candidate for this one? Since comparing these to print comics kind of means you're comparing them to superhero comics, since that's what dominates the print comic marketplace. Wonderella.
Yeah.
Wonderella is maybe top five superhero comics going.
Yeah, Wonderella is really good. Long running as well.
Yes.
And, you know, something like God Hates Astronauts would have won this category, but God Hates Astronauts is a print comic now. So,
yeah.
Good going, Ryan Brown.
So what's our definitive pick?
Let's do Wonderella.
Wonderella, congratulations on your Gordy Award.
All right. Those are our categories from Rom-Com Your Mom. Thank you for those. Our next two categories come from Mike Pankowski. First category, favorite documentary watched in the past year.
Ooh, now this is a tough one. As our regular listeners know, you and I both really enjoy documentaries.
Yes, we like to recommend documentaries on the show quite often. I have an immediate pick for this.
Okay, what you got?
I Am Santa Claus. The documentary that follows around a group of real bearded Santa Clauses as they prepare for Christmas throughout the year. And one of those Santa Clauses is Mick Foley. He's on the cover. It is available on Netflix, and it is a very enjoyable watch. I watched it right at the end of the year, but I think it is fair to say that it was my favorite.
Have we talked about it since you recommended it, right? On Ajax.
I don't remember if I watched it in time to recommend it before our Christmas episode. Whether I did or not, it is absolutely worth watching.
I'm pretty sure you did because I watched it and I remember talking to you about it. And I can't remember if we've talked about it since I've watched it. Very, very good. I did not cry, but I almost cried.
Yeah, it gets close. When Barbecue Santa shows up at Mick Foley's house.
Yes.
And his kids go nuts. It is a great moment.
Barbecue Santa talking about how he had his name legally changed to Santa Claus because he didn't like who he was when he was Frank.
Yeah.
But he liked who he was when he was Santa Claus. That comes at the beginning of the movie, and that almost got me.
Yeah.
That almost got me with tears. Gosh, there are so many really, really good documentaries this year that I watched. The Glow documentary is great. It's on Netflix. The Imposter is a story that keeps getting weirder and weirder as it goes on. If you've never seen that, it is actually the same story was recently covered on an episode of The Dollop, which is a podcast that I've recommended. But I think my favorite was probably Evocateur, which was the Morton Downey show documentary.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that one, it's such a weird key to pop culture in the late 80s, early 90s. It's really interesting and really fascinating. And like when they get to the part where they're like, yeah, all this happened in 18 months, that is kind of the shocker.
Yeah.
Battered Bastards of Baseball was also a really good one. All the 30 for 30s, the Bad Boys one about the Detroit Pistons, that one was really good. Yeah, I think Evocateur ended up being my favorite.
All right. The next category from Mike Pankowski is our favorite wrestling match that had more than three competitors.
Now, this was an interesting one.
Yeah, I have two key choices for this one.
Well, I feel like my choice is really obvious.
Okay.
NXT Fatal 4-Way.
Fatal 4-Way. That was one of my two.
The part where Tyson Kidd put Tyler Breeze in the sharpshooter and Adrian Neville slid into the ring to grab his hand to keep him from tapping. Like, it is also not possible for him to say, I quit. That was beautiful. I really, really love that match.
That is a good match. And I think by the definition of this category that it has to have more than three, that may have to be our winner because my other pick has three.
Okay.
And that is, it was the triple threat intercontinental title match on SmackDown.
Yes. Between
Cesaro, Dolph Ziggler, and Tyson Kidd. That is amazing. That match is so good. It's probably my favorite match of the year.
That was a match overall. That we had people telling us to go watch.
Yes. I rarely watch SmackDown, and I saw a description of that match, and I was like, I got to go watch that. And boy, was it worth it. Another good one that had more than three, I would say, would be the Survivor Series match.
Survivor Series match was really good. Certainly, Dolph Ziggler did a great job in that match.
Yeah, it's all Dolph Ziggler there.
The main event of WrestleMania was really good.
Again.
The last good match. The last match before it all went bad on us.
Again, that's only three.
It's a three-way.
I think by virtue of this category saying strictly more than three, we have to say Fatal 4-Way.
Yeah. I will say, Matt, there was a match that I know you didn't see, but it was a New Japan match that was a traditional Survivor Series style match, but it also had over-the-top rope eliminations. Mm-hmm. That was Chaos versus Bullet Club. And it was before Survivor Series, and Yoshihashi, who is kind of the in my running commentary that I do in my head, I refer to him as the junior partner of Chaos. He did a Dolph Ziggler-esque performance against Bullet Club. And, anything involving Bullet Club and Chaos, I am 1,000,000% in favor of. So that one was also really good. But, yeah, Fatal 4-Way, the most fun match all year, yeah, I think.
I'm going to have to go back and watch that New Japan match. There is a contender for 2015 that just happened, and I don't want us to forget it, and that is Aztec Warfare on Lucha Underground.
Aztec Warfare was so good.
It was so good, and it happened in 2015. Well, it actually happened in 2014, but it aired in 2015.
Yeah, it just aired.
We can't give it the victory, but man, really was Aztec Warfare good. Holy moly.
I feel like that Shield versus Evolution match was also this year because Seth Rollins' turn was this year, right?
Yeah, the Shield versus Evolution match was at Extreme Rules.
Yeah, I think it was.
That was a good match.
That was really good.
The spot where Seth Rollins jumps off the railing into the onto everybody from the crowd.
Yeah,
is that maybe the spot of the year.
That kind of being both the Shield's last match and Evolution's last match, that was good stuff.
It was. It was very good stuff. All right.
Can I just say that my love of Batista, my love of Batista outside the ring is at an all-time high, and 2014, my hatred of Batista in the ring was an all-time high. I cannot wait to see that dude as Mr. Hinks.
I'm
stoked about it.
He's going to be so, so good, Inspector. I'm psyched for it.
He was he was really good in Guardians. Mr. Hinks, I could not be more excited.
I guarantee you, if Batista had made his return after Guardians premiered, it would have been such a different reaction.
Well, it would have been because also it wouldn't Listen, we all wanted Daniel Bryan to go to WrestleMania. Everybody wanted Daniel Bryan to go to WrestleMania. If they would have waited to pull the trigger on Batista coming back, it would have worked in their favor, I think. But, that's armchair booking for you. Armchair bookers, Chris and Matt.
Mike, thank you for those categories. We've got one category from Harry J., and that category is the best elevator pitch comic of 2014. This is the comic that has the best concept that can be pitched in a few sentences and grab you.
I think that there's a real easy pick for that because it is the title of the comic. and that is Transformers versus G.I. Joe, colon, the ongoing series.
Now, I thought that that would get a nod in Best Transformation Sequence, but I think it definitely works in this category as well.
Yeah. Obviously, Gotham Academy, I think, oh yeah, it's teen drama in Gotham City, like supernatural teen boarding school drama in Gotham City. That's a pretty good pitch for me specifically.
Yeah, that's a great pitch.
Van Jensen and Jose Pimienta's The Leg also has a really great elevator pitch, I think. But I, you know, Transformers versus G.I. Joe, the ongoing series by Tom Scioli, is that's hard to beat.
Yeah, I have to agree that
every time I think about that comic, I can't believe it happened.
It is beyond thought in many ways. All right, that's our winner. Harry, thank you for that category. All right, our last set of categories. Chris, we're going to knock out this award show in 90 minutes. Take that, Oscars.
Yeah, look, just say who won.
Just say who
won. That's why we don't have anyone else on our award show. No speeches.
Not even the winners come on our award show. The final set of categories comes from Patrick Shunk. And his first category is Most Confounding Comic.
There's no way this one isn't Forever Evil.
Yeah, it's confounding in, like, what the hell are they doing in terms of that?
Forever They're setting Evil. Up for a really good Dick Grayson series.
Yeah. It's a head-scratcher.
Like, our main takeaway from Forever Evil is that we don't know if something was serious or not. We don't know if they meant it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, when? When are we going to see the Justice League fight a bad guy? Have they done it yet?
Once a bad guy joined the Justice League, then they fought a bad guy. That's what happened. I think Pax Americana is also in the running for this, but in a totally different way. It's confounding in that you have to unravel it. You have to read it the right way. You have to assemble it. You have to figure it out.
You have to read it the right way and the wrong way.
Yeah, that's true.
And two other ways.
But I think, yes, Forever Evil has to win most, like, what the fuck is happening?
Yeah, like, comic. Like, in our time reading that comic, how many times were we just like, what is going on?
Yeah.
Why is this happening?
Okay. Yeah, I think Forever Evil is the definite winner there. Patrick's next category is the best single panel of 2014.
Well, much like Best Page Turn, I would be tempted to go with a panel from Sex Castle for this, which is the one where Shane Sex Castle says, you know, somebody says, like, oh, you brought a knife to a gunfight. And he says, you assholes brought a you to a me fight, which is one of the best lines of dialogue, I'm going to go ahead and say, in history.
It is very good.
We have not talked about Zero Year at all in this comic. Or in this podcast, which is a shame, because the final act of Zero Year, I thought, was amazing.
I thought it was really nicely done, yeah.
And I believe, did the panel of Batman Super Blimp coming through the hot pink hurricane, and the cop saying, it's the goddamn Batman, did that happen this year? Or was that at the tail end of 2013?
I don't remember which year it was in, but if it was this year, that is a definite contender for best single panel. Another contender for best single panel, and possibly best page turn, even though we've already decided that, is the opening splash page to Grayson number 3.
Which one is that?
With the double entendre dick joke.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That was delightful.
Absolutely delightful.
Yeah, like a lot of really good pages. Like it's one of those things where it's really hard to narrow it down. Like every page in Cosmic Scoundrels was a really good page.
Yeah.
Gosh, there's so much really, really good stuff this year.
Let's award it to Sex Castle with a runner-up to Grayson. I think that's fair.
That's everything we love.
That's absolutely is. Patrick's last category and the last category of this year's Gordies, the 2015 annual Gordy Awards.
Well, the penultimate category.
Oh, right. Yeah, there's one more after this. Song that Chris Sims wants to sing most right now.
Well, Matt, I don't know why I would waste time on the Gordy Awards. This is important. These are the most prestigious awards in comics, right?
Absolutely.
And pop culture. And pro wrestling.
Anywhere.
I don't know why I would waste time singing a song when I could be getting down to this sick beat. And the play is gonna play, 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 play. And the hater's gonna hate, 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 hate. And the tailor's gonna tay, 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 tay. Shake it off, shake it off.
Okay, I gotta cut you off there, or we're gonna have to get a cease and desist letter from Taylor Swift's attorneys.
I bet Taylor Swift's the nicest C&Ds.
I'm sure they are lovely.
I bet the I's are dotted. I bet the I in desist is dotted with a heart.
Those are all our user-submitted, our listener-submitted categories. I guess we have users. Do you guys use us? Those are all our listener-submitted categories. Thank you to everyone who submitted categories for this year's Gordies. We have one category that we do every year that we got to wrap up the show with. Now, somebody suggested that we give U.S. Champion this year. And we have agreed that U.S. Champion is the current United States Champion, Rusev.
No one embodies the American dream more than Rusev.
Rusev Utria, Rusev Machka. That's what I have to say.
Well but said, Matt. Well said.
We have to give the War Rocket Ajax Intercontinental title this year.
The highest honor, the most prestigious award in comics.
That's right. Chris, who is your Intercontinental Champion for 2014?
This is really difficult because the Intercontinental Championship is just kind of a vague, like, who was the best?
Yeah.
Who did now, the best in comics?
Let's review our winners from the past 2 years.
I believe defending champion for 2013 is Jeff Parker.
Jeff Parker is a former winner. Allison Baker is a former winner.
Publisher of both of our comics.
Macho Man Randy Savage is a former winner.
The inaugural winner.
So, with that in mind, who, Chris, do you say is the winner of the Intercontinental Championship for 2014. I have my pick. Who is yours?
It was tough. I thought about Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa just because Archie as a whole has been doing so well, and Afterlife with Archie I think is the biggest and most visible part of that.
Yes.
But I am going to go with Mark Doyle.
Mark Doyle is a wonderful pick for the winner of this belt.
I have said it so many times. No one wants to love DC Comics more than I do. And that has been a little bit difficult over the past few years. But the new wave of Batman books, whether it was what was going on in Batman, whether it was moving Francis Menapole and Brian Bucciolato over to Detective, whether it was the soft relaunch of Batgirl, the launch of Gotham Academy, the launch of Grayson, Arkham Manor, that's a concept I've never seen before. And I've read them all, guys. I've read them all. So much amazing stuff came out of the Bat office this year under Mark Doyle. Just doing an incredible job, I think. So I would pick him.
Even the stuff that didn't work for us, namely the soft reboot of Catwoman, is at least trying something new. You know?
Yeah, like it is a book that I wasn't a huge fan of, but that was very interesting. In how it was built and came about. It's something I haven't seen before, which is really, like, that's half of what I want.
Yeah. My choice for Intercontinental Champion is the person who just barely lost out on our Best Beard Award. Chip Zdarsky.
Chip's had a good year, but I think 2015 is his year.
Could be. Chip, you just barely missed out on Best Beard. You just barely missed out on Intercontinental Champion, because I think we're giving it to Mark Doyle. But
here's the thing about Chip, right? We've known Chip's great for years.
Sure.
We've known Chip is amazing forever. You know, I read Monster Cops before I started writing the ISB. That was 10 years ago. Readers of the National Post have known Chip Zdarsky is amazing. The world figured it out this year when Sex Criminals came out. And, you know, late 2013. And now Chip announced two books at Image this year.
Yeah.
At the Image Expo.
He's got a big year to come.
Yeah. We should go ahead and put a reminder in our calendars for next year's Gordies that Chip Zdarsky is probably going to be Intercontinental Champion.
Keep reaching for that IC belt, my friend.
Grab that brass ring, Chip.
That's it. Yes, reach for that brass ring. Don't be like those millennials. That's it for the Gordy Awards for 2014. It's our 2015th annual Gordy Awards.
Which is weird. It's weird that we had one for 1 BC.
Zero. Well, the year zero.
There is no year zero, Matt.
There had to be. All right.
We had one for 0 year.
This has been great. This has been a great award show. Thank you to all our listeners who have been listening all year. Thank you to everyone who has donated to our Patreon. Actually, our Patreon donors are definitely in the running for the 2015 Intercontinental Championship.
They might get the $1 million belt.
If you have not donated to our Patreon, it is easy to do. You can go to patreon.com/warrocketajax and help us out there. We are going to start pumping out the rewards for Patreon very soon. Stickers, t-shirts, keychains. We're going to start recording extra stuff and giving that exclusively to Patreon donors. We're going to talk more about our Patreon in the very near future. But if you would like to go contribute to it right now on a monthly basis, you can contribute as little as $1 a month or as much as $20 a month. If you have money to burn, please go do that. If you would really actually sincerely like to be a patron of War Rocket Ajax, you can contribute as much as that per month. Thank you to everybody who's done it so far. If you would like to do it, go do it. Chris, I guess we should wrap up the show by telling everybody where they can follow us and check us out.
That's right, Matt. I changed my Tumblr name. I know a lot of people have been asking me about that. Everything is the ISB now. So I am the ISB on Twitter, the ISB on Tumblr. And of course, you can find links to everything at about.me/Chris Sims. So it's not all the ISB yet. Definitely check those out and find me at comicsalliance.com each and every weekday. 2015 is the year that I will be doing the Batman 66 episode guide. That's going to take some time. So please join me for that every Monday. Matt, where can everybody find you?
Well, let me first say that everybody should go to warrocketajax.com. That's our website. That is where you can download the show. You can read show notes. You can stream the show. And you can leave comments. Also, you can check out our Every Story Ever list. And if you have donated to our Patreon, you have made it so that we're going to be doing a monthly Every Story Ever special in addition to our normal weekly episodes of War Rocket Ajax. You made that happen. So thank you for that. And be on the lookout for that starting this month, January. We're going to record one of those Every Story Ever episodes. Also, check us out on iTunes. If you go to iTunes and you search for War Rocket Ajax, you will find the show. If you like the show, leave us a review. The more good reviews we get, the more listeners we get for the show. And that is great for everybody. For me personally, You can go to about.me/MattDWilson, and you can find links to all my stuff, including Copernicus Jones Robot Detective, my comic, with artist Kevin Warren and letterer Dylan Todd, letterer/designer Dylan Todd. The final issue of the first arc, issue number 6, comes out this week on Wednesday. Go get it and read the full opening story of Copernicus Jones Robot Detective. I am working on the script to number 7 now. It will continue. It will not end at issue 6. So, go check that out. If you want to find me on Twitter, I'm on Twitter at HighMindedMW. I am deeply considering changing my Twitter name because I continually get followed by weed accounts. followed and then unfollowed and then refollowed by accounts that are strictly about weed. So I may be changing
really,
my Twitter
you
name.
You really ought to.
Yeah, I may be changing it. We shall see in the near future. But for now, it's still HighMindedMW. Hey, everybody, thanks for listening to the Gordies. We will be back in 1 week with a regular episode of War Rocket Ajax with a guest and everything. We're going to debut a brand new end-of-the-show segment. That is not Every Story Ever, because we're going to be doing monthly Every Story Ever episodes. So stay tuned for that, everybody. Chris, any final words before we wrap up these Gordies?
Nope. We're getting ready to start 2015, so thank you for supporting us through another year. I hope everybody is geared up for all the fun and excitement that we're going to have. Check out the Patreon, and we'll see you next week.